Okay. I want to thank all of you who are on the line right now for listening. And I also want to thank all of you who are listening at your convenience to the recording. We've got the Eisen at UMass asset. We have an additional conference call to talk about Sukkot. I'm going to allow time at the end for questions about whatever you would like to ask. You can ask online today at the end of the phone conference, or you can call in at any point, or you can ask me now. It's, whatever you'd like if there are questions. There were two topics that Yossi asked that I relate to. One is the notion of Shemitah as it affects the mitzvah of Aramin and Esrog in particular. And the second is the mitzvah of Hakel. Of course, the mitzvah of Hakel is not a very practical matter, but it is something that is relevant specifically this year. So I'm going to put some time into that at the end as well. And I want to thank him for arranging this. Okay. The mitzvah of Aram Minim includes four Minim that are basically equilateral. Just one second. I shouldn't call them equilateral. They're basically equal in significance. In other words, you need all four minim in order to fulfill the mitzvah, and it's regardless of which min is missing that you're just not yotzei the mitzvah if you don't have it. One of the minim is a fruit, the etrog. The other three are branches. Now, the Gemara does entertain the possibility that when it comes to the Shemitah year, even branches might have Kedushat Shviit, which we'll discuss in a minute. But there's no question that the Esrog has Kedushat Shviit because it's a fruit. Now, what is the notion of Kedushat Shviit? We know that we're not allowed to work the land during the Shemitah year. There are many things that if we don't plant them, we don't expect that they're going to grow. The annuals, right? Wheat, barley, most vegetables. If you plant them, they grow. You don't plant them, they don't grow. Now, sometimes a little bit of them grow in any case. That's what's called svichim. Svichim, according to Apsak Halacha, by Torah law, is permitted to be eaten. By the Yisud Rabbanan, we're forbidden from eating them, lest the people actually plant them and then say, well, they grow by themselves, so that's why we got them. Prevent that from happening, you're not allowed to eat any of the svichim. Anything that grow, anything that you have to plant in order to reasonably expect that you're going to have it during the Shemitah year. But trees live for many years. It doesn't matter how many, but they certainly live for many years. And they almost always give fruit on their own, regardless, those trees that do give fruit, of course. They may not give as much fruit as they would give if you would be doing all sorts of things to work the tree, so to speak, but a certain amount of fruit they're likely to give in any case. And the fruit of trees during the Shemitah year is called Peros Shviyas, and they have Kedusha Shviyas. And there's no ether at all of eating these fruits. It's fine. We're on. There's no issue at all of eating these fruits. On the contrary, according to the Ramban, it's actually a mitzvah to eat these fruits. When we say it's a mitzvah, it doesn't mean that everybody has to sit down and eat as much peiros shvius with kedusha shvius as possible. But it means that these fruits have what's called in the language of Zoraim, anitan. In other words, they are given for a specific purpose. There's a way of dealing with them. They have kedusha. The pasuk says, "Vayita Shabbat Haaretz Lachem Lo Achla," that the Shabbat Haaretz, which means the fruit of the land during Shabbat Haaretz, during Shemitah, is for eating. And the Gemara Darshins, "Lachla V'lo L'Schora," "Lachla V'lo L'Mulugma," "Lachla V'lo L'Hesed." You're supposed to eat it, and you're not supposed to do business with it. You're not supposed to make medicines out of it. You're not supposed to allow it. You're not supposed to treat it in a way that it gets lost. In a way that it's, in other words, you're not allowed to just throw it out. It's as fruit of the of Shnat Shemitah, it has kedusha and it's supposed to be eaten. And if you're not going to eat it, you can't do anything else with it. That seems to be the point. What defines the fruit of the Shemitah year? There's a machlokas rishonim about this, but the simplest opinion is that any fruit whose blossom took place during the Shemitah year, after Tu B'Shvat, is certainly fruit of the Shemitah year, which is almost all the fruit in Eretz Yisrael. There are very few, if any, that take place before Tu B'Shvat. And then the fruit that develops from those blossoms have Kedushat Shviyit. The alternative is that they reach the size of Gidul Shlish, one-third of their size, during the Shemitah year. In any case, this is almost certainly going to apply to any legitimate esrogim that exist during this year. In other words, the fact that we're no longer in the Shemitah year, that the Shemitah year ended the last day before Rosh Hashanah, does not mean that the esrogim that we now have don't have Kedushat Shiyat. On the contrary, they all have Kedushat Shiyat, because just about all of them blossomed during the Shemitah year, and they also reached a third of their size during the Shemitah year. So basically all etrogim available, the great majority of the etrogim available for the mitzvah of Arba Minim this year, are going to have Kedushat Shviyit. Of course, that's if they grew in Eretz Yisrael. If they grew in Chutz La'aretz, then in Chutz La'aretz there's no Kedushat Shviyit. There's nothing, and it's not an issue. But Hashem, there's a tremendous market for Arba Minim in the world today. Many Jews make sure they have their own private set of Arba Minim, as opposed to, let's say, several hundred years ago, where a community was lucky if it had one set. You know, you see all sorts of tshuvos and piskei halacha in that regard. But today, Baruch Hashem, at least the Western Jewish community is quite wealthy, and people are able to afford to get their own Arba Minim. And also, thank God, in Eretz Yisrael, there's a major effort to grow the Arba Minim. So, thank God, by and large, there's enough to supply the whole world. But there is an issue that you're not allowed to do business with the etrogim. And of course, if people are not allowed to do business with it, frankly, they're not going to grow it. And please understand, it's not just that they're not going to grow it during the Shemitah year. People are not going to pick occupations for themselves that's going to put them out of business every 7 years. There is a difficulty in working out how we can sell etrogim to one another during the Shemitah year, which is certainly necessary in order to get it around. Okay. So just before I go on and try to explain how that might be done, let me explain something else. The fact that the Etrogim have Kedushat Shviyit is in no way a preventive from using them to fulfill the mitzvah. That's not a problem at all. In theory, and to a large extent in practice, what has to be done is that the etrog grower, during the 6 years, he just has to keep the mitzvot atliyot baretz. But the etrogim during the Shemitah year, he or she is required to be mafkir then, allow anyone to come and take any of the etrogim. And after doing so, of course, he can go and collect them himself. But if he does that, he's not allowed to sell it. He's only allowed to distribute it. Now, furthermore, there's another issue. During the Shemitah year, you're not allowed to work the land, which means you're not allowed to do things that will help the etrog grow. I can't tell you exactly, but both quantitatively and qualitatively, there will be better estrogen and also more estrogen as a result of doing all sorts of things to the land, by fertilizing the land, by pruning the tree, which is one of the melachos of Shvius. There will be more estrogen and better estrogen as a result of doing that. You do things to protect the fruit. There are many things that are done in order to increase both the quantity and the quality of the etrogim or any fruit that grows in Eretz Yisrael at any time. Now, during the Shemitah year, you're not allowed to do these things. When I say you're not allowed to do these things, in terms of trees, there is an important distinction. We don't have to allow our trees to die every 7 years. That's not the halacha. But what we do have to do is not overdo their maintenance. In the Lashon of the Gemara, what's permitted is v'ukmi, to maintain it, v'lo livruye, not to make it healthier, not to make it better. Now, there's a very important machloket. It's famous as being a machloket between Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish about the permissibility of l'ukmi ilana, of maintaining a tree during the Shemitah year. It was the opinion of Rav Kook that what's permitted is l'ukmi ilana, but not l'ukmi teira. In other words, the permissibility of maintaining the tree during the Shemitah year is exactly that, to maintain the tree, so that in year number 8, or 1, as you might call it, after the Shemitah, the tree will still be there in full quality, and you will then be able to do whatever you have to do and want to do in order to make fruit grow. But you're not allowed to do anything in order to increase the produce of the fruit during the Shemitah year. On the contrary, you just build up the tree, make sure that it's going to be around during the following year. If you see that there are weather conditions that are going to harm it, or there are soil conditions that are going to harm it, or whatever, so you're allowed to do anything you have to do in order to maintain that tree for after Shemitah. Lukmi Ivana is called. However, you're not allowed to do anything to make sure that the tree bears fruit during the Shemitah year. That's Rav Kook's opinion. The Chazon Ish was of the opinion, and Smasha this way in the Nimukei Yosef in one place as well, that during the Shemitah year you are allowed to do things to help the tree produce a reasonable amount of fruit, the amount of fruit that you would normally expect it to provide without much help. Exactly what that reasonable amount is of course, always a big question of debate. But it can't be like a super-duper bumper crop that you're allowed to do to try to bring forth. But it's clear that there's something wrong with the tree and it's not going to be reproducing this year because you're not giving it certain treatments. You are allowed to give it those treatments in order to allow the tree to give a reasonable amount of perot even during the Shemitah year. This is called Lu'ukmi Teira. And it was a position of the Chazon Ish that you were allowed to do this do these things during the Shemitah year. And of course it means you're allowed to do it also during the you can imagine that this makes a big difference for Esra growers and for all fruit growers. The Esrogim are bound to be better amongst the Esrogim growers who have relied on the Chazon Ish and have done what we call the Ukmi Tera, have done treatments on their trees in order to make sure that their trees give a reasonable amount of Esrogim during the year and a reasonable quality of Esrogim. Then those who have been careful to follow the opinion of Rav Kook that you're not allowed to do any treatment that's going to benefit the fruit of the Shemitah year itself. Now, as many of you can imagine on your own, this very chumrah position of Rav Kook doesn't leave much room for maneuvering. And the alternative ends up being what's known as the Heter Mechira. The Heter Mechira is that the land in which the trees are growing are sold to a Gentile. And the position of the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Kairo, and most of the Rabbanim in Tzfat at his time, was that if the land belonged to a Gentile during the Shemitah year, then the fruit do not have Kedushas Shvi'is. And therefore there's a permissibility of Schora. You're allowed to do business with it. And that resolves the problem completely. And certainly there are many Esra growers who rely on the Heter Mechira, which is used not only for Esrogim, but for a great many of the crops of Eretz Yisrael. And that allows them to do business with the Perot Shviit. The Heter Mechira is questioned on two levels. It's, first of all, selling the land of Eretz Yisrael to a Gentile is itself very problematic. Rav Kook wasn't really the first one who permitted it. It was permitted by many Rabbanim, two Shemitahs before Rav Kook, in the late, in the 1890s. I think it was 1898 or 1890-something that was the first Shemitah where this became a practical issue. The question of Rabbi Yitzchak Chaim Spector was matir it, and the Yeshua Smalko was matir it. Many Gdol Yisrael at the time were matir the Heter Mechira, and Rav Kook was the one who wrote a very long kuntrus in his Sefer Shabbat Haaretz explaining why it was permitted. But the cornerstone of the Heter Mechira is that it works, meaning that once you sell it to a Gentile, the peros no longer have Kedusha Shvi'is, and you're allowed to sell it. And this is the position, as I mentioned, of the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch. The Baal Plukta of the Mechaber was the Mabit, who was also a great Rav in Tzfas in the time of the Shulchan Aruch. And Mabit held that you can sell the land to a guy, it doesn't matter. The fruit still has Kedushat Shi'it. So, in effect, what Mabit was saying was that the Heter Mechira is not effective. The Minhag in Yerushalayim of all Gedolei Yisrael in Yerushalayim, including the Badats of the Eretz Haredit and so on, was to accept the position of the Mechaber. the Chazon Ish was of the opinion that of the Mabit, that the Het Mechira is not effective. In any case, whether the Esther Gor relies on the Het Mechira, if he relies on the Het Mechira, the whole question of Yisuschara falls off. That permits is growing the estrog and selling the estrog and so on and so forth. It is a very acceptable and valid shita that, first of all, are being a tzaddik at the expense of the agricultural growers in Eretz Yisrael isn't exactly a great sitkus. We certainly want them to have the business rather than somebody in some Mediterranean island or something like that. And second of all, Pashtus is that it doesn't really affect the legitimacy of the esrog itself. In other words, since you're allowed to eat the esrog, even if the person who grew the esrog was in violation of the nisur, the esrog is still kosher. There is a shita that the Chazon Ish didn't hold by, that nevad, a tree which was worked, its fruit are forbidden, but this is not really accepted by halacha. So, if an individual doesn't want to rely on the Het Mechira himself, but the esrog grower relies on it, so it's not really an issue. You're not relying on it. He decided to rely on it, and that's his business. You're just receiving the esrog. Of course, you're paying money for it, and that money will have din of kedushat shi'it. But he'll deal with it as he thinks he should deal with it according to the psak halacha that he has. Having a Heter Mechira is one way of resolving the problem of the use of the esrog for this mitzvah, that you're allowed to do business with it according to that shita. If as many of the esrog growers do not rely on the Heter Mechira, I can't say many, I don't know exactly what the percentage is, but certainly some don't, then it gets a little bit more complicated. What's required is that the esrog grower simply allow anyone to come and take the esrogim, and even if he collects them all himself, he still is not allowed to do business with it. So how do we overcome the problem? How do we get it distributed? Well, this was a problem that Chachamim at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash were very aware of. There are many fruit that had kedushat shviyit, and that there was a difficulty in getting people to actually being able to take advantage of it. In other words, the Chachamim wanted this fruit to be eaten. They didn't want it to go to waste. Not just the sorghum, but apples and pears and dates and figs and everything else. So what they developed was something called the Notzar Beit Din. Notzar Beit Din means that the Beit Din took responsibility for collecting the fruit that had kedushat shviyit. This would incur some cost for the Beit Din, but whatever the Beit Din's cost was, you were allowed to pay. It's assumed that it's going to be ultimately less than the actual value of the fruit, but the Beit Din will then go and hire people, usually the growers of the fruit themselves, to collect the fruit, to hand it over to the Beit Din, and then Beit Din distributes it. However it decides to distribute it, and it gives people to distribute it. Now, ideally, the fruit of Kedushat Shviyit, distributed by Beit Din, is distributed only in Eretz Yisrael. But there are attempts to distribute it in Chutz Laaretz as well, if as a result of that distribution, it's going to be treated with Kedushat Shviyit. And this is fair to assume regarding the slogan that are sent to Chutz La'aretz, that they're going to be treated with Kedushat Shvi'it. Certainly people are going to use it for the mitzvah and then let it sit there. And then they don't usually throw the esrogim out. And if they do, it's really at the time that they're no longer of any value. They've dried up. So the money that you pay is not for the fruit itself, but for the value of the labor that was involved in collecting the fruit and in distributing the fruit. The Gemara also suggests another way of dealing with this, which we'll call havla'a. That's really the Lashon of the Gemara. And that is that if someone sells you both a lulav and a trog, for example, let's say a lulav would normally cost $50. I don't know what it costs in America. And the etrog also costs $50, let's say. So the salesman will tell you, listen, I'm charging you $100 for the lulav. And it's sort of understood that that he's including the cost of the etrog in the price of the lulav. And you then give him $100 for the lulav and the etrog together. Officially, the price is being paid exclusively for the lulav. You get the etrog for free. It's called havla'a. And while one might argue that this is a kind of a ha'arama, it is a kind of a ha'arama. It is a kind of a sleight of hand, so to speak. But it's what allows the proliferation of the struggle, because otherwise people are just going to leave it on the tree. And if you're living in New York or in New Jersey or in Massachusetts or Maryland, wherever you live, you're just not going to get an esrog unless somebody picks it up from you for you and sends it to America. So the need for overcoming the difficulty is absolute. Otherwise, people are just not going to have Ivermectin. And even if I can say, well, we can always have just one for the whole community. Even that one is going to require this heter, because otherwise it's just not going to get anywhere. So this is how the prohibition of doing business with the slogan is overcome during the Shemitah year. And whether it's overcome with the heter mechira, or whether it's overcome with the otzar beit din. There are those who try to avoid the struggle with the so completely during the Shemitah year. I think that's an unfortunate conclusion. There is a mitzvah to provide help to Jewish people in general, and certainly to the issue of the Eretz Yisrael in particular. And there's certainly no less of more of a reason to assume that the esrogim in Chutz La'aretz and Murkav are not really completely esrogim, that they've been tainted by esrog trees one way or another. So the best way really to fulfill the mitzvah of Arminim is to get an etrog from Eretz Yisrael. And if it comes from Heter Mechira, then it comes that way. If it comes from Otzar Beit Din, then it comes that way. But one way or another, that's how we get our etrogim from Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year. I'm going to stop talking about the etrogim right now. If someone wants to ask questions later on, that's fine. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Hakel. Hakel is a mitzvah that we read about in last week's parasha. In the Sukkot following the Shemitah year, on the designated day, all the Jewish people get together in Yerushalayim and in the Beit HaMikdash, and the king reads the certain portions of Sefer Devarim to the people. The fact that everyone is there together and everyone's seeing the king read from portions of the Torah, from Sefer Devarim, to everyone is apparently an extremely monumental and inspirational event. It's expected to bring Yirat Hashem to anyone who participates in this mitzvah. The Rambam, in describing the mitzvah of Hakel, calls the king and this event the Shaliach Hakel, the agent of God, who is repeating to us the words of Moshe Rabbeinu as described in Chumash Dvarim, that Hashem incorporated into the Torah. Bizman Hazeh, there's no, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, and the proper fulfillment of the mitzvah isn't really there. But in Eretz Yisrael, people do try to get together in Yerushalayim at that time, and very close to Har HaBayit, the president of the state will read something or other, or if not him, someone else will be appointed to read. And the current president, Ruby Rivlin, is certainly capable of reading the Torah. He's a man who, even though not necessarily observant, is well known to attend Beit Knesset Shabbat morning throughout his life. And what Shuli goes to the Knesset Yishurun, and he certainly knows how to lane on some level, and my guess is that he himself is going to lane some of the Parshiot, and then he'll appoint someone else to read some of the other Parshiot of the Torah. It would certainly be a nice thing if, in the context of Chol Hamoed, you give a shir about the mitzvah of Hakel and review the psukim in Parshat Vayelech that we read on Shabbat Shuvah, and perhaps in a small way, each of you in your community even make a kind of a mak hakel, so that it should be understood what was done, and the Bezrat Hashem will be done at one point in the future. Okay. Well, thank everybody for listening. You can unmute to yourselves right now if you'd like, and I'm going to stand the line now for anyone to ask a question if they would like to, either about the topics I've just discussed or about any other topic.
Rushader, should I stop the recording now?
No, you don't. Yeah, I guess you can stop the recording. Yeah, sure.
I stop it? Okay.